In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Attaboy, John, your accuracy is increasing with age.
That's not bad, considering my eyesight's going with age. I'm John Kurlinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take a lighthearted look at the serious, non-lighthearted issues of creation evolution, where we came from. We think is an important issue for all of us to understand. We take a very strong view of Scripture and
Good science. And today, Stan, we're going to look at an interesting thing that relates to interpreting things like evidence. Mm-hmm. And we talked last week on hermeneutics, how do you interpret mm-hmm. Scripture. Today we want to talk mm-hmm. about interpreting science and interpreting evidence. And there is evidence which seems to support what we would consider, at least from a Christian perspective, good biblical understandings of this thing called the flood.
Flood. Now, why do we always do this flood thing?
Well, we do the flood because it's a scary word if you are an evolutionary scientist. You don't want to bring God into the picture.
Well, that's right.
It's like God was involved.
That kind of comes in hand in hand with that.
And that might mess up my data.
Yeah, that might. My whole paradigm may be shifted.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Well, you know, and it's funny. I don't think you could ever see it more clearly exemplified than when you see all the causes, the possible causes for what happened to our dear friends, the dinosaurs.
What happened to them, Stan? They're dead.
Well, they're all dead. Everyone agrees with that.
But how'd they die?
All the possible causes are listed like, asteroids or stomach flus or, mice.
They drown.
Yeah, actually, if you look at the evidence, all the bones of dinosaurs indicate that they were covered up in a flood.
They were buried in sedimentary
and
rock.
And you never see, cause of the extinction of the dinosaurs, even down at the very bottom possibility, 1% chance, you never see drowned.
Drowned, yeah.
But anyway, that's kind of fun. That illustrates it.
Yeah, but when we look through the evidence of just, let's say, ancient folk literature, and this is a study that was mm-hmm. done by a wonderful scientist, by the way, by the name of Ariel Rolf. He's kind of like the grandfather
or patriarch
of biblical science mm-hmm. in some ways mm-hmm. in his research. And he's done some studies on things that would help us understand our current land structures through the eyes of a biblical flood.
That's right.
And included in that study is not just a study of the rocks, but the study of the literature. And it's interesting that Fifth Thompson did a 6-volume literature called the Motif Index of Folk Literature. He studied all the ancient folk literatures dealing with past calamities, and he reveals that there is a reference there which tells us, interestingly, things that what did they write down? What was important for them mm-hmm. to record in their cultures about past calamities? Like, we all think of, for us today, we'll think of a calamity being like, say, 9/11.
Yes.
Will be a recent calamity. Or
here in the Northwest, Mount St. Helens.
Mount St. Helens mm-hmm. or something that's a past calamity, and mm-hmm. that would be one, of course, by fire, mm-hmm. volcano. Mm-hmm. But when you start, interesting, we go up, we'll take the list from the bottom. One recorded past calamity was the sunrise. Someone got up with a hangover.
That sun is just killing me.
It's destroyed the whole world, or at least my place.
Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Now, these are references now we're going to go through of supposedly great calamities in ancient literature and how they affected the world, so to speak. The next one was objects dead and alive, and I'm not sure what that's referring to.
What
that
story
covers
was that?
A lot of objects.
That could be, something big and dead jumped me.
But one ancient culture referenced a terrible calamity that was caused by, are you ready for this? Earthworms.
The giant worm got him.
It's got him. It's strangling him. No, get him off. Get him off.
All of these have only got one reference, and the next category was just one, was an ogre.
An ogre. That's that ancient Gaelic reference.
To probably Eve.
Yeah. Okay. That was her fault.
Comes out ogre in the Gaelic,
But anyway. No. Another one that didn't get too many references, but may actually have probably been witnessed would be like a large stone.
Now, I wonder what that means, large stones. That means stones from heaven, like asteroids?
Or would it be a big rock rolling down the hill saying, look out, here it comes. A landslide, possibly.
I remember way back when the great rocks rolled down the hill.
Might be landslides, who knows?
Might be.
The other one was...
That was two for large stones. Now, the one we get up now to six references in the ancient literature.
Well, what was that? That was probably the people from Minnesota or North Dakota. Continuous winter.
Continuous winter.
That would wreck your day.
Boy, a real bad cold spell.
It might be reference to ice ages.
I think so.
Ice age, I should say.
Absolutely.
In the singular.
There are only two more categories. The next one up is fire with 19 references. That's quite a few.
That's probably volcanoes, most likely.
Volcanoes. It could have incurred involved ancient forest fires that were quite huge.
Okay, let's get a drum roll. Okay. What's the number one?
The number one.
Ancient story about a calamity in the past is a
flood. Coming in with a mere 122, or six times the next one, and 122 times sunrise.
Yeah. But anyway. Yeah. So the whole point of this thing is saying that the ancients, almost every culture has a flood story of an ancient calamity. Not too many have the earthworm story.
That's right. But but every corner of the globe, John, and I mean it is worldwide in the distribution of these folk stories where a flood, has something to do with the gods or the whatever up there were unhappy with mankind and sent a destroying flood. Mm-hmm. And often the story includes somebody on a raft or a boat or people and animals. And it was after the flood that those people and animals repopulated the world.
Yes. It's interesting, though, when you read those. Is there evidence? Now, we've studied a little bit of just the folk literature.
Yeah.
That would tend to support the biblical story of a flood,
sure,
as far as at least being a story that was in existence.
It had some historicity.
Yes. The next thing that we'd like to look at as far as looking at was the
more
flood
evidence.
Evidence for a flood is actually in the geologic column, because that's often held as the evidence for evolution.
That's
right. But really, could it be the evidence or one of the major evidences for flood?
Well, we could talk a lot about many, many areas, but the one long word we're going to talk about today, John, is...
Paraconformity.
Paraconformity. Let's say that together, class. Paraconformity.
What does that mean, Stan?
Well, a paraconformity is an oops in the layers of the rock. An oops.
A real technical term there. It's spelled O-O-P-S. Oops.
We try to make this understandable. A paraconformity is a gap in which there's something missing, something wrong with the layers of rocks we're looking at.
Well, let me see now. If you picture... the Grand Canyon in your mind. You got the Grand Canyon there. All these layers.
And
the geology has put a date with each layer.
Right. There are ways that modern science thinks that they can date them by fossils and radiometric dating.
And therefore, each layer is like turning a page of a paper or an onion. Each layer has a specific date and time that just naturally follows the next one with just unbroken sequence.
No, not really, because when we talk about paraconformities, we're talking about pages that are missing in
the book. What do you mean? Someone tore a page out of the book?
Or even a chapter.
Wait a minute. I mean, these gaps aren't as nice and neatly as I've been describing them, everyone consistently on the other?
No. Actually, sometimes there are problems. Now, what we're talking about, listeners,
that's the oops.
That the oops is really an area of between one layer and the other where there are missing evidences of erosion, because there's often millions of years in these gaps, supposedly missing. Between one layer and another, there's no evidence of erosion. There's no layer of deposition. So
in between?
It's just a flat, one on top of the other. There's no fossils in there. So there's nothing. There's like often many millions of years that are missing, and it's very difficult. There's some, for instance, in the Grand Canyon, there are three fairly well-known paraconformities, gaps in the record. One is 6 million, one is 14 million, and then there's one that's a whopping 100 million years.
Whoa.
Missing, a layer that is gone, and I mean really gone, and with no evidence that it was ever there to begin with.
In Dead Horse Point in Utah, there's a gap in some layers that they think is about a 10 to 12 million years.
And then another one, 15 to 20 million years.
What we're saying is that, so you're going down this geologic column, and you find one layer resting on top of another.
Right.
But when you start dating that material, there
using
is...
Using the modern ways
using
that
the modern
they do,
scientific
they
ways, there mm-hmm. are there's millions of years, 10, 15... up to 100. We're not talking just a couple, maybe a slip in the thing. We're talking big sections of time gone.
Yeah, even in geologic measurements, because sometimes they'll say a few thousand, 100,000 years, that's nothing. But when they get up to a million years, we're talking about real years, kind of like the budget. You know, when you're talking about the U.S. budget, when you're talking about billions of dollars somebody will equip, now you're talking about real money. So we're talking about real years in these periconformities, these gaps.
By the way, they're dated scientifically today. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for instance, let's assume that you're talking about something that was 100 million years ago, and it's laying it's the original surface of the Earth 100 million years ago. Well, what's going on for that gap period of, let's say, 20 million years? For 20 million years, there should be something going on with that layer. It should be, there should be water from rain. There should be wind. There should be
maybe
erosion going on.
Maybe that's when the giant earthworm came through.
The earthworm was
came
waddling through
ate
through
the
there.
Whole gap out.
That's where the earthworm. Favorite flavor.
It was
he only
favorite
ate that.
Flavor. He ate that whole layer
clean
away.
Clean as a whistle. Clean as plate, boy.
It was the earthworm. That's all I could think.
That could make, yeah, maybe that answers two questions there. Earthworms in the history of man and the other. But anyway, for 20 million years, you would expect there to be erosion. You would expect there to be valleys and little canyons. Or new material laid right on top of it that would fill in those little layers, those little canyons and cracks and things that are caused naturally by erosion in millions of years being out in the sun. The only way you can account for it, John, and this is not a very good answer, is to simply say for those 20 million years there was no weather,
and there was no rain, there was no wind, there
yeah,
was no nothing.
There was nothing.
Which is really a gap in logic, it sounds like. A paraconformity in logic. Missing logic.
Yes, missing logic. That's the paraconformity we're talking about. Yeah. So that's a bit of a problem. Paraconformities seem to indicate that the standard way of understanding the geologic column with millions and millions of years is flawed when these paraconformities, and these are not uncommon.
And can you have things like flat erosion, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff like that? The whole point is that we think we have a torpedo text which explains how the geologic column was formed in the first place, which would explain how things got deposited without evidence of erosion between layers. Underwater, by the way, these are all the geologic column we're talking about in this area is dealing with the sedimentary deposits, i.e. water deposits.
Water deposited
So
material.
What is our text which kind of gives us a clue of where we might look for a better answer to explain the geologic column and these paraconformities?
Genesis 7 is the record of the flood taking place on the earth, in particular, the beginning of it and the power behind it. In verse 11 it says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open.
Kablooey.
And the floodgates of the sky were open, and the rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights.
So you have both the blast from underneath subterranean waters.
Breaking up the crust of the earth.
Mm-hmm. Making big slushes of various mixtures of muds mm-hmm. and materials. And you have the water from the heavens flooding above as well and washing things down. You start combining them into an underwater sloshing of waves and all kinds
and
of volcanic activities.
And they can be flat as a table, one on top of the other. And that would be an easier explanation of suddenly millions of years of no erosion in between.
Because there wasn't any millions of years of erosions.
Exactly.
They were just one layer of sedimentary rock being overlaid with another one.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, that conforms the
yes.
geologic column.
A conformity.
A conformity. And we hope you can conform your thinking
yes.
to a much more biblical approach to maybe understanding your earth science and, more importantly, the God of the earth science.
That's right. Interpretation of data works in the scientific field as well. Tune in to another episode of
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend, you're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.